This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're going to talk about agile software development in the federal government, and we have a couple of gentlemen in from Octo Consulting Group. We have Mehul Sangani, he's the CEO, and we have Jeremy Collinet, he's the senior manager. And we're going to talk about agile software development, and we're going to come to some terms and define the terms that people use and talk about how it can be applied to different federal agencies and maybe how it all works with earned value management and maybe the whole acquisition process like we talked about last week. But before we begin, let's start off with our guests. And people are kind of scratching their heads going, Mehul Sangani, boy, he's born in India or something. And that funny name. And tell us about your background, Mehul. You don't sound like you're born in India, do you? Where were you born?
I was born in India, I grew up in the mountains of Southwest Virginia. I grew up in Blacksburg, Virginia.
Yeah, you should have more of a Virginia accent than anything, huh?
Some folks say that I still have it a little bit, but I think over the years I've lost it here in D.C.
Yeah. So you're just a kid from Blacksburg, Virginia. Huh? There's a school there, isn't there?
Yes, Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech's my alma mater. I'm a proud townie and a proud alum of Virginia Tech.
And not just one degree, but three different fields. That's kind of yours. You go to your LinkedIn profile, you see three separate degrees, and one's in psychology, which is the curveball.
Yeah, I guess I've always been a little bit of an overachiever, but I kind of use that as a little bit of a hustle to get my parents to pay for an extra year of school. I graduated in 4 years with my engineering degree and then was able to con them into paying for another year so I could finish up another couple of degrees and spend some more time with my girlfriend, who's now my wife.
Yes, I know some people that just to go to the another season of football.
That's right, yeah. I enjoyed my time
there. More football tickets. And Jeremy, tell us about your background and how you wound up working for Octo, please.
Oh, so prior to here, my background was serving as the director of digital marketing for a couple of large marketing firms on the West Coast and in the Midwest. And actually, we wound up here because my wife took a job in D.C., and I came to Octo because I had an opportunity to kind of correct a program that had been failing.
Ah, topic number one we have here. That's interesting. Now, when you think of agile software development, everyone thinks of, oh, brand new project. We have this brand new thing that no one's ever used before, and we're going to start it from scratch. But I think a lot of people are biased in thinking about that. In fact, if you read books on software development, that's what you think of. I think they call it a greenfield project. But actually, Jeremy, this is what most people have. My guess is that 70-80% of the projects in the federal government are maintenance projects. And how can you use Agile going in? I'll ask you directly. How can you use Agile going in a project and fix it with Agile? It seems almost impossible.
So, I mean, generally speaking, when we talk about Agile practices, the version of Agile that I follow is Scrum. And for the most part, I tend to treat it as agnostic as to whether or not it's a new project or an existing project, because at the end of the day, it's a list of requirements that have to be implemented. And whether that requirement is, you know, this page isn't loading, this button isn't spelled correctly, or I need to integrate with a third-party system in a different agency. At the end of the day, we treat all of these things as changes, right? And that was the whole promise of configuration management in the first place. So effectively, really, the big difference between the two is where your requirements come from. In a new project, you're going to have big, you know, boards and different groups that they're going to convene that are going to have input, versus you may only have help desk as an input on a project that's existing or a smaller, you know, community group.
You know, Mehul, different perspectives of the problem here. Jeremy, obviously, down in the weeds, knocking out code, working with people. You're more at the executive level here. I would think there's a resistance to go Agile from an executive level, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you really have to have a lot of trust and faith in terms of going from a more structured or what is often referred to in development life cycle methodology or jargon as waterfall-based approach to more of a modular approach and see incremental returns. So in some ways, it is a departure from what I think executives specifically in software development or application development are accustomed to. But in a lot of ways, it allows for much quicker returns on investment, which I think as an executive, we can all embrace.
Yeah, certainly. And I'll just define the problem here. Most of my listeners know what this is all about. Traditional software development is called waterfall, where you say we're going to do these five things, and then 4 years later, you have an application that's done and perfect in every way. Okay, we'll take and pick people off the floor off that one.
Right.
What has happened over the years, and it's been many, many years since Agile's been introduced, is they said, look, let's just take bite-sized chunks, maybe a chunk here, a chunk there, pivot and move, be agile. And at the end of the day, we'll have the different iterations or glops of code, and maybe it'll fit better at the end of the analysis, called Agile, called Scrum, Lean, XP, all kinds of terms. So y'all have heard of it. Most of my listeners have heard of Agile. They kind of get the idea of being modular and being flexible. But, you know, Jeremy, it's hard to talk about it, but actually hard to just walk in the room and get people to change.
Oh, it certainly is. It's generally you find that people are very resistant to change, especially when, you know, it's a process that we spend a lot of time spending a lot of money bringing consultants to write very detailed process documents. And a lot of these organizations and agencies within the federal government have, you know, plans that they've been working on for 10, you know, 15 years, maybe five
years. We've always done it this way, Jeremy.
Exactly. So at the end of the day, we find that the challenges in going against that is bringing in something that seems so counterintuitively simple because it is a relatively lightweight process. Mehul, do you want to add anything?
Absolutely. I think when you look at agile software development, when you're talking about existing systems, as you talked about, John, you know, we view agile software development with those existing systems that make up about 70% of system challenges. We view it a lot like refueling an airplane while it's in the air. So what that means, it often has to be done to an existing system within the existing confines of an agency's parameters, its networks, its requirements, its existing licenses. So one big example where we did that is, you know, and Jeremy can talk further about this, is where we took on a failed attempt by another contractor to implement the core mission system at the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. So this was a case management system that tracked injuries, illnesses, fatalities across the country. They were previously using a strict waterfall-based methodology to get that done. We got them on an agile path, an agile framework. We helped engender that trust that you talked about in a very, very short period of time, and we were quite successful with doing that. And that involved working with a group of skeptical stakeholders, a group of stakeholders that oftentimes didn't even use a system that, in terms of their legacy system, their previous system, didn't even use Windows. And we had to get them onto a system that was internet-based, lightweight, you know, throw out whatever jargony, word du jour that's techie of the day, and get them onto not only that, but an agile-based approach for being successful. And Jeremy was part of the team that led that.
And so, Jeremy, really, there's a technical capability, which I'm sure you have, but there's also almost like a thought leadership or a persuasive component to changing the way they write code, isn't it? I mean, half your job may be modifying someone's opinion on something.
Actually, I'd say that's a big part of it, because one of the biggest misconceptions about Agile that I've run into, and granted, I'm relatively new to the federal space, is everybody thinks Agile is something that your technical teams do, but really Agile is a fully, you know, it's a mature management process, and there are many different flavors, as you mentioned, XP, which is a little more tech-based, but Scrum really does encompass the entire project lifecycle. What I find, though, the way to be successful when introducing Agile is be patient, and success will come as you deliver value. So in the case of OSHA, I wasn't able to go in day one and say, we're doing Scrum and this is the way it's going to be.
Oh, yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. In fact, our client was be like, I don't care, just you need to get stuff done. And I was like, I'm going to show you a process that will deliver value. And we had to start off. And in our first sprint, which was 4 weeks in length for that project, at the end of 4 weeks, I was able to deliver more value in a single release than they had seen out of the first year of analysis, because they saw software going to the field. And as soon as I start being successful with this process, then I have people scratching their heads and say, well, wait a minute, what are you doing here? What else can we do to make this even better? And so success leads to success. And that's generally the approach that we take.
Now, Jeremy should be the spokesman for Vivek Kundra and all these other people in the federal government who've been promoting this idea, and Jeremy maybe put it in work boots. But this isn't new. I mean, Vivek Kundra came up 2 or 3 years ago on 25 points. Talk a little about that, Mihal. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I think this is something, this move towards doing more with less, showing more incremental value, consolidation of existing systems and approaches. I mean, that's a pervasive theme. It doesn't matter who the administrator du jour is or tech czar du jour, depending on who's in charge in Vivek's case, you know, when he was working with the Obama administration. I think that's something that's been in place for some time. I think what's different now is that you have proof points. You have firms like us that specialize in delivering.
They can point to Jeremy and go, looky there.
Absolutely. And I think that now that we have these proof points where we've been able to show value not only with new systems, but be able to do things in a more agile way, deliver more faster time to results with existing systems that are in operations and maintenance mode, and show the results in terms of total dollars and time and energy saved, I think it makes it much more pervasive. It's not just talk coming from some czar. It's actual results and tangible value.
Yeah, my listeners like results. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll try to put the Agile software process in work boots, talk more about specific problems like acquisition, maybe specific problems like different operating systems and moving to the cloud. You're listening to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio today, two people from Octo Consulting, Mihal Sagani, CEO, and Jeremy Kalani, who is a senior manager. Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have two gentlemen from Octo Consulting. We have Mihal Sagani, he's the CEO, and we have Jeremy Kalani, senior manager. We're talking about agile software development and what it means to federal IT professionals. There are many federal IT professionals who've done Agile for years. They know all the ins and outs, they know everything about it. Some have maybe just heard it briefly, maybe went to a conference and kind of have a passing acquaintance with Agile. What we're trying to do is put Agile in work boots and talk about Agile from maybe a manager's perspective and how it fits in. And during the break, Jeremy, I was turning to you and I say, well, there's some projects around my house that I'll do, and some projects I'll bring in a carpenter or a plumber. What about from a manager's perspective in the federal government, when do they call in Octo, and when do they do it themselves, or should they train their own people, or where do you draw the line?
You know, I think that answer isn't necessarily clear, because there are a lot of goals and competing things out there that these managers have to think about. If you go back to the 25-point plan, you know, one of the focuses was building and nurturing a culture of excellence in IT program management, and of course, agile leadership is something that squarely falls in that camp. Some organizations may have visionaries inside, and that organization may have a low tolerance to failure, and therefore they may have no problem trying to bring something in on their own and then later call for support, if you will, to kind of help shore up things or answer some questions. And other organizations may be in the position where, hey, we're interested in starting Agile. We very much, you know, we've heard about this. We've seen it work in other agencies, but we don't know where to start, in which case then they can call in professionals to help them get started.
So, Mihal, the federal government has special terminology, the medical world has special terminology, legal world has special terminology, so is software development. And there's words, and Jeremy tossed out the words sprint and scrum and XP, and do these words jive with federal terminology? Can you write an RFP and include these words, or do you have to use special federal vocabulary?
Absolutely. I do think that there is, in the part of the acquisition community, a tendency to cling to terminology that is akin to what they have traditionally done, which is waterfall-based software development and not incremental-based software development. But I think more and more you are starting to see terms like sprint. And what you really have seen for quite a bit of time, you know, is this move towards performance-based contracting, which is more focused on outcomes and results, very, very much aligned with agile software development and the sprint and sprint methodology and the scrum and some of the terms that Jeremy has already used. But at the end of the day is more focused on incremental results and delivering that for the federal government.
know, Jeremy, you've had some experience in the commercial world, and I like to remind my listeners and my federal guests all the time that, you know, there's some problems with big projects in software in the federal government, but in the commercial world, there's problems with big projects, and maybe they've switched to Agile a little bit earlier. Your experience in the commercial world, contrasting it with the federal world, same kind of situation with resistance to Agile, or they embrace it quicker, or what's your experience been?
I think that overall, there's probably a little bit more willingness to move towards it, only because they don't necessarily have the level of governance in place that they have to work through. As an example, I've worked before with a nationwide telecommunications carrier that their process was built such that if somebody had a better way of doing things, you were allowed to do that with a very small window of examining that process. Whereas some of our federal clients, there's no way you will ever be able to implement a new process without convening a change control review board and then all these other three and four letter acronym boards.
And Mayo, this is where it addresses a question that comes in your lap or on your desk is okay, in the commercial world, they have engineering governance, they have financial governance, and then make it work. But in your world, the federal, I mean, this is just the start of the governance, is layer after layer on top of that. So when you walk in and talk to senior level executives, how do you convince them to even consider Agile?
Yeah, absolutely. I think in the federal government IT environment today, there's no shortage of compliance hurdles. But at the end of the day, each level of compliance, each level of bureaucracy that you see within the IT environment today is focused on ensuring different levels of confidence that results are going to be achieved. When you're talking about Agile, you're able to show results in a much shorter duration. You're able to hold those tangible results up and point to them. But at each step, whether it be a one-month sprint or a six-month increment that you're working on, you're able to show those results with the security enabled, with the data governance enabled, with the enterprise architecture enabled. And I think that leads to more believers over the long run.
Jeremy, one concept involved in Agile software development is coming up with a user story in capital letter U, capital letter S. And this is a big part, I think, of it. Tell us about a user story and where it fits in this whole process.
So a user story is a term that comes from the Scrum flavor of Agile. And basically what it is a goal-based requirement. So in Scrum, we always look at things in terms of delivering value and goals. Instead of saying, I need a system that's going to integrate with XYZ, we talk about everything in terms of our users. And there's a specific format. So an example of a user story for a simple action like logging in, it would be, as a user, I want to authenticate to this system. I have identified who the user is. I identified what it is I want to do. And I could have gone further to say, so I can access a resource as the outcome of that statement. User stories are something that ultimately we can use to break down any user interactive system for the most part with modern web-based application development.
So, Mayo, they take a user story as simple as, let's say, signing on, and then they'd work with a group of developers and say, well, take this user story and write a block, a chunk, a module of code, and this is essentially what Agile software development is. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct.
And so they come up with this chunk of code, then they have instead of testing at the end in that chunk, they test it and they make sure it complies with standards as well. Then they go to the next story. Is that step by step?
Absolutely. But I think there's a structured way, and Jeremy can talk about that. We go through a structured process for how we prioritize each set of requirements with a group of stakeholders. And then they have skin in the game. They have, you know, in terms of some of the change management challenges that we talked about, they have a voice. They have a role in helping define that next set or iteration or sprint of requirements. And they have a role in telling that story too.
I love that term, skin in the game. That's exactly what Scrum people talk about. Ham and eggs, right?
That's right.
What do they say? The chicken
is involved, but the pig is committed.
Is committed. And they want someone committed. And as light and as soft and liberal artsy as a user story is, it's actually a very powerful tool in this iterative environment.
It really is, because one of the biggest problems with requirements, and I don't care who you talk to, technical people, acquisition people, requirements are always a problem when talking about federal systems. And a user story is a very simple tool that really knocks down a lot of barriers to ensure that when I say a user story, more than likely, everybody who reads it is now thinking the same thing, because it's a very small, like I like to say, easy to swallow caplet.
So federal listener is types in the computer. They go to Octo, O-C-T-O, consulting.com. They see all these pretty pictures. They see the awards. They see the white papers and everything else. And they say, well, you know, let me tell you something here. We've got a problem with a program that's failing. We've got an application that's failing. We can't call you guys in because we all started the waterfall. Can we apply Agile to maintaining. Can you apply Agile to fixing a situation too?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you look at where, you know, we as a firm have had our greatest success, it's always been with a scenario where we been brought into an environment where things have not been working as effectively. And we've been able to quickly come in and assess exactly what's going wrong, assess where we can take and leverage what has already been invested in, and then take that to the next level and show faster results. You know, another big example of that is an engagement where we're working with an intelligence and law enforcement community customer. This is an initiative, you know, to collect forensic information and laboratory information. It's an initiative that had failed, you know, two or three different times over the previous decade. And we were able to quickly come in and not only analyze what was previously unsuccessful, but lay out a foundation, lay out a roadmap for them to be successful going forward. And in just 1 month, we not only were able to stand up a system that was working, but deliver on some of the key core requirements that they needed in a very, very short period of time.
And John, if I may, there's a small kicker I'd like to add to that for going back to OSHA. I get to walk away at the end of the day from my job and get to say something really cool, which is that in the first 4 years, they had a lot of documentation to show for their work. In our first year in taking over that program, we had over 16 releases to production and over 1,000 items fixed or created from scratch.
There again, I think it's the results. I think what you're seeing now that you didn't see before is are tangible results coming from agile development processes. And, you know, we're fortunate to have what we believe are some of the very first few highly visible success stories there.
I like success stories. Let's take a break, talk more about success using agile software development. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have the CEO from Octo Consulting, Mehul Slagani, and the senior manager, Jeremy Collinay. Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We are continuing our conversation on agile software development and the federal government. We've taken it step by step. First baby step was defining it. The next baby step was, well, geez, can you use it on existing systems? And then, well, can you use it to fix systems? And the answer is yes, yes, and yes. I think the next step that my listeners have scratched their head going, well, wait a minute, John, that's not the federal government buys stuff. The way the federal government buys stuff is they say, here's our 120 requirements, come back in 3 years when it's done. So, Jeremy, does that drive you crazy when you hear that? I mean, the federal government can flex and move and actually can buy through an agile process, can't they?
It is possible, and I mean we're starting to see some agencies move that way because it is sometimes frustrating when you read some of the requirements, because requirements that go into an RFP, you know, they come from technical resources or program people, but sometimes they come from contract resources that don't necessarily have the right background. That's one of the government's biggest problems: writing good requirements.
What's your experience been, Mehul, as far as acquiring agile software development services?
I think it's something that the government is embracing more and more over time. As an example, one of our biggest customers, the National Institutes of Health, decided to implement an agile firm fixed price contract to modernize that agency and all the research institutes' entire IT portfolio. It's something the agency had never done. They'd never really done that type of contract vehicle before. They lacked a performance model within the agency. NIH turned to Octo to assist in executing the contract and ensure the successful implementation of different task orders. So what we did is we provided counsel and assisted the agency in developing a repeatable agile governance contracting implementation model, you know, overall framework that assisted the agency in awarding contractors this type of vehicle or this type of contract. And really what the agile governance process did is it provided a lot more clarity for them on the emphasis, the scope, what their overall outcomes needed to be. And I think you're going to see more and more of this type of implementation approach over time.
I didn't see one mention of any line of code there. It's almost like the management consulting aspect of agile software development is as big a part as the user stories and the sprints and the short modules.
At the end of the day, you know, agile is just a means to an end. And if you look at and you're focused on outcomes, I think that's where the government is moving towards. They're moving more and more away from the procuring of bodies and more to the procurement of specific outcomes. And I think that's a positive move for the government.
Tell me, Jeremy, do you write a blog on this, or is there a blog you can assist our listeners to take a read and learn about agile software development in the federal government?
So actually, oddly enough, the work that we just mentioned in NIH is a really good example of a modular acquisition, which, as you know, the government's been pushing now for almost 10 years as far as how to look at getting large multi-vendor programs going. And I did write a blog post, which you can find on our website by going to About Us and clicking on Thought Leadership, that talks about whether or not modular procurement really is a stepping stone towards agile development.
And Octo, O-C-T-O, octoconsulting.com. They got white papers there. They got all kinds of stuff, don't they, Mehul?
Absolutely, yeah. I think you can even go there and click on our people section of the website and see ugly pictures of both Jeremy and I there.
Well, that'll be disturbing for some, but maybe, you know, you hear a voice and you go, well, geez, that's what that fellow looks like. You know, you can't really tell by listening anymore.
Right.
When it comes to software development, Jeremy, what is this XP stuff? I've heard this thrown out there. Is very few people use it? Is it popular? It's all called extreme programming. It's a flavor of Agile.
Yeah, and it's a flavor of Agile that really is more focused on the technology side. The concept was still focused on doing iterations of releases. But of course, the big joke about XP was always that, you know, it's pair programming. And it's doubling up resources in the effort of two minds are better at solving a problem, more efficient at solving a problem than a single one. And I mean, we have seen good results of that out there. Although I think overall, and this is just my own personal opinion from my own experience, I think it is slowly starting to fall out of favor. And I certainly have not run into it in the federal space yet.
We have the 25-point plan from Vivek Kundra. We have people like Steve Van Roekel talking about modular software development. You think that's had an impact, or are they just like screaming in the wind somewhere? You think people are actually reading these documents from the White House and implementing them in agencies?
Obviously, there's a mandate for them to implement some of these processes and procedures and policies. But to be candid, I know that all of those processes, those policies, you know, with the change in administration, it is always met with a degree of cynicism. But if you look at the changes that have taken place over the last two administrations, beginning with the Bush administration, now the Obama administration, it's been a heavy focus on doing more with less. And Agile fits hand in glove with a lot of those processes. I think what you're seeing is pervasive themes, whether it be data center consolidation or cloud first, or no matter what the initiative is that's being pushed, you're seeing an initial push towards initial compliance, but a larger, more pervasive push towards adopting that with other secular approaches over time, like Agile.
Speaking of blogs, I have a blog called Tech Tuesday Blog. I'll be blogging about this interview. You can read more about that. I've interviewed Steve Van Roekel, and what Steve says is he says, hey, look, John, I don't have any budget. I'm just a guy in an office, and people respect me because of my title, but I'm just some guy. But I think, you know, from a user perspective, if they see a guy like Jeremy walking in down the hall, he solves a problem, they're going to say, well, maybe Steve's a great guy and Vivek's a great guy. But, you know, this Jeremy, I mean, maybe it does. Maybe we should consider it. It's almost a human one-to-one more than just a highfalutin executive from the federal government.
It's always more powerful when you have tangible proof points. And I think as government stakeholders are looking for other CIOs, I mean, I think to your point, you know, the role of Van Roekel or a Vivek Kundra is almost one of issuing edicts. And over time, I think you get the generic eye roll that comes from having edict after edict pushed down your throat. But the reality is that all government stakeholders, be it CIOs or IT decision makers, are asked right now to do more with less. And so if there are proof points, if there are Jeremy Colonnades out there that they can gravitate to get their mission accomplished with a reduced budget, I think they're going to gravitate to those stakeholders.
So Jeremy, in traditional Agile software development, there's this person called a stakeholder and very important part of the process in getting your feedback. Is it always possible in a federal government to get that kind of stakeholder feedback?
I'm so glad you asked this because this is the thing that of all of Agile I'm the most passionate about. One of the biggest keys to success is government involvement. And what I found is the government is oftentimes used to saying, well, I hired you to figure that out.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
So at the end of the day, you know, is it possible to be successful? Yes. And in fact, going back to OSHA, when we started, the government was like, look, you guys got to figure this stuff out. But as soon as we were able to demonstrate success, then all of a sudden they're saying, hey, you want people to be dedicated. You want product owners. You want people making decisions who are empowered to make those decisions on behalf of the agency. You got it. We have other clients, though, where unfortunately we can't get that level of involvement. And so we still have to be agile ourselves and, you know, work with the best of what we can get.
Well, Mejo, this is a funny word he just used, product owner. Like, I own a Ford, so I'm a product owner, right? Or I own an Apple. So what is a product owner?
I think a product owner in our context is someone that owns a mission outcome. You know, So for example, in the OSHA context, we have a group of enforcement agents that are out there enforcing occupational and safety and health laws. So for us, it's a group of stakeholders that have a common mission. You know, those are product owners. It's a collection of mission outcomes, if you will.
I was at your website earlier today, octoconsulting.com, and I remember that image of OSHA, someone with a hard hat. The visual image I remember from your site, and I'm saying, well, these guys help the people in Kansas who are in construction not get hurt. I mean, I'm paying my taxes to make sure no one wants anyone to get hurt. But agile software development can actually accomplish that task.
Yeah, if you look at that particular system, we not only were able to get up and running a system that tracks injuries, illnesses, and fatalities across the country, but it has a tremendous predictive analytic component that allows OSHA inspectors and stakeholders to look at where the injuries and fatalities are occurring and target limited resources. You really only have 3,500 inspectors that are responsible for the safety and well-being of every single American worker. Limited resources there. So how do you apply them? And our predictive analytic component of the system really allows them to apply limited resources in a more impactful way. And as hokey as it might sound, save and prevent injuries, save lives.
Hmm. A hokey story from a hokey. Is that what we have right here?
That's right. I had to slip that in.
We're going to have to take a break, talk more about agile software development in the federal government when we get back. You are listening to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, two gentlemen from Octo Consulting, Mehul Sangani and Jeremy Collinay. Welcome back to Fed Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Mehul Sangani, CEO of Octo Consulting, and his colleague, who is Jeremy Collinay, who's a senior manager. We've been spending a lot of time here talking about agile software development and the federal government. Many of my listeners read blogs. Some of them are involved in Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Ray Gilray. Do you folks tweet? Do you have Twitter handles?
Absolutely. At Octo Consulting is our Twitter handle.
OCTO, Octo Consulting, and octoconsulting.com URL. Go see that picture of the guy in the hard hat. So that's what they do. They make sure the guys wear their hard hats and don't damage themselves or hurt themselves on a construction site. A lot of different topics here we've covered. This is part of the show where I ask each one of my guests their technology background. And because people are listening, they're going, yeah, that Jeremy knows a lot about software development, but is he really a nerd or not? And I want to know what kind of phone he uses. And so we're going to give Jeremy the test and you the test. We're going to find out who, in fact, is the card-carrying nerd. So, Jeremy, I waltz over your house this afternoon. How many desktops do I have sitting around your house?
Desktop sitting around the house, actually, you will find one disrepaired iMac.
Wow, that's actually a good answer. And how many cell phones have you purchased in the last 12 months, Jeremy?
Two.
Two. Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do, but only as a consumer.
Okay. You have a personal blog?
No, I do not.
Okay. Do you use any online personal backup?
We use Carbonite.
Okay. We use you and your... And what kind of smartphone do you have?
iPhone 5S.
Okay. How many apps in that phone have you used in the last 30 days?
All of them that are installed.
15, 20?
Probably about 25.
Okay. And how many tablet devices you got floating around your house?
Six.
Six. Yeah, that's a good number. Are you involved in any social networking sites?
I use Facebook, but again, only to stalk other people.
And the last book you read was electronic or paper?
It was electronic.
Electronic. Well, I hope you don't stalk me. I'll get scared. Mehul, can you top that one? I don't know if you can.
Not
that's
sure.
Going to be pretty
not
tough.
Sure. Jeremy's my tech guy.
Jeez. Well, we'll see who is, in fact, the card-carrying nerd.
That's right.
Go to your house this afternoon. How many desktops do I see plugged in?
Zero.
Zero. Now, that's the phrase that pays.
Yeah.
That's what I want to hear.
Laptops, no desktops.
We know that. And how many cell phones have you purchased in the last 12 months?
One.
You see, you know, he's not a nerd. Nerds are changing every 2 days.
And it's cracked at that.
Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
No, I don't.
Okay. You have a personal blog?
No, I do not.
Meep.
Yeah.
Do you have any use any personal online backup services?
I use the Carbonite service that Jeremy referenced.
Okay. What kind of smartphone do you have?
iPhone.
Okay.
4S.
You lost that one.
I know.
How many apps have you used in the last 30 days?
I've used all of them. I have a few less. I have about 10 to 15 that I use consistently. Okay. Mainly the Five Guys app, so I can get some burgers without waiting in line.
So I know this big guy. We're going to break into your house this afternoon. How many tablets are we going to see floating around your house?
You're going to see three.
Just three.
One for my 4-year-old, one for my 2-year-old, and one for my wife and I to share.
What social networking sites you participate in?
I am on, now I think that's where I got Jeremy. I'm on Instagram, definitely. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter.
Well, he's getting some cool guy points.
Yeah.
And last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
Paper, let me be frank. You got a biography of Frank
Beamer. Well,
we
know who the nerd in this room is. You're a nerd wannabe on a good day, I'm afraid.
That's right.
So, Jeremy, Agile software development's been around 40 or 50 years. People have been really talking about it the last 10 or 15, and it's gotten popular here in the last 10, I'd say. Where do you see this whole process heading, and where does Octo fit in? And just give me a 5-10-year plan where you see this whole Agile software development heading.
You know, it's something that we all sit around and talk quite a bit about. You know, what Agile will someday become waterfall, right? It'll become the old thing. And we're seeing something now called DevOps, which starts with all the management processes around software development, and then starting to merge them with infrastructure management, which obviously ties very closely into how we leverage the cloud. Beyond that, there's a burgeoning movement out there to take DevOps to the next step, which will include all of your security management and all of your traditional CNA activities also as agile tasks in a big unified approach.
Mayhul, when I look at my last 100 shows, I find out what the popular shows are. Mobile, Agile software development, and healthcare IT. Those are the top three most popular ones. So I've obviously done shows on Agile in the past. So what's the big deal with Octo Consulting? Why are you different from the other folks that do Agile? Can't just anyone do Agile? ABC company, this company, that company? Why should anyone even consider you guys?
I think what sets us apart is the fact that we have tangible results that we've achieved. I think when you talk about Agile, when you talk about big data, you know, those are the very jargony terms that are thrown around, you know, just by just about every vendor in the marketplace today. But what we take a lot of pride in is the fact that, you know, as our tagline suggests, our tagline's results matter. We have tangible proof points. We've worked with agencies on their core mission tip of the spear systems, whether it be in the intelligence community, whether it be in the law enforcement community. We have specific proof points for systems that have failed over the last 3 to 10 years multiple times. We have a specific experience working with systems that are already deployed, that are currently in operations and maintenance. And then we also have experience delivering results for systems that we've had to build from scratch. And I don't think many providers out there today have the depth and breadth of experience in Agile development that we do.
So, Jeremy, let's say one of my listeners goes to an FC event and they see a table sponsored by Octo Consulting and they go, yeah, I heard that guy on the radio. And maybe 2 o'clock in the morning, there's snow on the ground. They're listening to this interview and they're saying, yeah, I'll probably call up those fellas and maybe have them get a little small little baby project they can play around with. So it's not just for small projects, is it? I mean, this is kind of an approach that works with big and small.
It does. I mean, Scrum and Agile both scale very well, and in fact, a lot of organizations, if they're starting greenfield, may start with a small pilot project where they've gotten special approval to skirt normal like governance processes in order to see what the outcome is. But then if you go back to our NIH example, that project is really a scrum of scrums. I mean, it's like one major program office running 9 separate Agile projects. Oof. And then bringing that all together.
Mayhul, I'm going to ask you a question, and this is going to be a tough one for you. This is like asking a hot dog vendor who should not eat hot dogs. Is there a situation where you wouldn't recommend an Agile approach to a software situation?
Well, I think there are a number of different examples where Agile may or may not make sense. I think if you're looking at an environment where, you know, folks aren't going to be able to dedicate the resources or the time to prioritize key requirements. If you're looking at an environment that is not conducive to absorbing or impacting change, you know, I think those are high level examples. But I think those are environments that you're really not going to have a lot of success, you know, with an Agile type approach. It really does involve, you know, an investment, a conviction to making or actually doing things in a much different way. And if you don't have that conviction, it's going to be very, very difficult to have success.
Jeremy, what's your perspective on situations where maybe Agile won't fit?
I mean, there are times when that some projects are happily content to be, you know, waterfall. We run into that from time to time. Sometimes it may be a particular work stream in a larger project where this particular work, because maybe it's installing a single COTS product, which of course is a very linear task. You know, we do run into those things from time to time. And so, I mean, we don't necessarily say Agile is the answer to everything, but it is the answer to a lot of things.
So Mehul, can you go get a degree in Agile? Can you get a bachelor's degree from Virginia Tech in Agile software development? Or what kind of certifications, or how do you let someone know you're qualified in this area?
Yeah, I'm not so sure you can go to Virginia Tech and sign up for a degree in Agile. What you are seeing is a lot of universities now also embracing this change towards Agile and incorporating Agile software development into their core curriculums. Separately, there are a number of different certification programs out there and available for folks to get certified. Jeremy could probably talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest one is the Scrum Alliance, which is the official professional organization of the Scrum flavor of Agile. And it has a number of levels, starting off with a certified Scrum Master, which is the modern ringleader of an Agile process. You can become a certified product owner, certified Scrum practitioner, and certified Scrum trainer.
And you can be a product owner and still work for the federal government, because the product is more of a concept here, huh?
Yep. The product is just a system.
That's all the system is. And so sprints, products, it's new terminology, but I think it's being embraced by many in the federal community. It sounds unusual, but it really is practical when you think about modular software development.
Absolutely. I think this is a movement that is, as you mentioned, has been afoot for some time. It's taken on various forms. But as you see more and more success stories, you know, like the ones that we pointed out, I think this is quickly going to snowball. It's going to become the way of doing business. And for us, you know, one of our mantras is, in terms of how we go to market and the services we provide, we believe that efficiency is the new innovation. And I think that's a mantra that federal executives are having embraced more and more, doing more with less. And, you know, looking at approaches like Agile software development to take on, you know, these efficiency measures and do more with less, accomplish more with less.
Sometimes you get a reduced budget forces you to try new projects, new approaches that may work, and Agile probably fits the bill here. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'd like to thank my guests today, Mehul Sagani, CEO of Octo Consulting Group, and his colleague, Jeremy Collinet, Senior Manager. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and federalnewsradio.com.